Hello, and welcome to the podcast. My name is Anna Part, and this month we will be celebrating Black History Month by revisiting the subject of last year's Black History Month podcast. I've actually been working since then to secure the rights to use the audio from an oral history belonging to Jasper Brown Jeffries Jr. That was held... Hello, and welcome to the podcast. My name is Anna Part, and this month we'll be celebrating Black History Month. We're actually going to be doing that this month by revisiting last year's Black History Month subject, Jasper Brown Jeffries Jr. I've actually been working since last year to secure the rights to use audio from an oral history that Professor Jeffries did in 1987. That is currently held by the Schomburg Center for Research in Black Culture in New York City. It's actually a department in the New York Public Library System. And I am extremely excited and very honored to say that their legal department has granted us access. And now I'm allowed to share part of this amazing interview with you this month for our podcast. I hate that. So this interview was conducted by Kathleen J. Prestwich in February of 1987. This would have meant that Professor Jeffries was 75 years old during this interview. And I would like to mention a couple of things before we get started. First of all, this is archival audio. That means that it's not going to be the highest quality sound. There is not much I can do about that. Additionally, there seems to have been a passing train when they were recording this. If you're listening real closely, you might be able to hear a couple of toot toots in the background. So please disregard those. It's not your phone, which is what I thought was happening when I heard it for the first time. I do need to remind everyone who's listening that Professor Jeffries' opinions are not necessarily the opinions of the National Museum of Nuclear Science and History. In this interview, he discusses frankly some of his political beliefs, and these do not reflect the beliefs of the museum. We try very hard to be apolitical. We are a nonprofit, and we do our very best to present the facts without bringing any kind of beliefs into our interpretation. However, he talks about this stuff, and it's important to include that in the historical record. So just a heads up, he was not a fan of Ronald Reagan, and you'll hear about that later on in the podcast. So if you would like a fuller discussion of Jeffries' early life and a more complete version of his biography, please feel free to go back and listen to episode 9 of this podcast. Episode 9 of this podcast, because today we're really just gonna jump right in. We're gonna be starting with an interesting anecdote about Jeffries' experience of education in the 1930s. In this clip, Jeffries speaks about his own experience of education, and he credits his parents' strict expectations when he was young as contributing to his pursuit of a career in academia. Now I'm going to stop talking and let you hear what Professor Jeffries has to say. Of course, the main interest for this podcast, our main interest, this podcast's interest in listening to Professor Jeffrey's interview is his time working on the Manhattan Project. So let's listen to that. So Margaret DeFay, a fellow instructor at the high school where Jeffries taught physics, as well as, I should mention, Jeffries' future wife, actually convinced Jeffries to attend graduate school at the University of Chicago because that's where she was working on her graduate degree in social work. So in this next clip, Jeffries recounts his time in the Signal Corps before he joined the Manhattan Project and how he was hired onto the project. Here, Jeffries discusses the formation of an organization of Chicago scientists and continues on about his experience working on the Manhattan Project, as well as he talks a little bit about the security measures that he experienced both during his work and after he had moved on from the Manhattan Project. Jeffries continued to teach at A&T for 3 years and enjoyed the work, but the pay was not good enough to support his growing family. At this point, he had 3 children. He would eventually go on to have 4, but, you know, a growing family. He received an offer to work in the engineering industry, building periscopes and automatic gyro compasses, Professor Jeffries continued to teach at A&T for 3 years, and he really enjoyed the work, but the pay was not good enough to support his growing family. He now had 3 children. He would eventually go on to have 4, but his family was growing, and he needed something that paid a little bit better than teaching for A&T. He received an offer to work in the engineering industry, actually building periscopes and automatic gyro compasses for the Navy in Brooklyn, and this had a much better salary. He stayed at this job for about 5 years, living in the Bronx and commuting into Brooklyn every day. That was where he said there was a considerable effort in industries to integrate at this time, and he felt like he was treated fairly as a black man doing this work. He also worked for Bell Labs briefly in Madison, New Jersey, where he was again involved in some secretive war work, so we'll listen to what he has to say about that. Jeffries says that after working several jobs in the industry, he had a, quote, hankering for academia, unquote, and worked as a math teacher at Staten Island Community College for a very brief time. But because they were living in Westchester, New York, Jeffries decided that he was done with commuting and that he wanted to work closer to home, which meant that he began work at Westchester Community College. Jeffries says that it was difficult to work black faculty into higher positions in the mathematics department, which was unfortunately not a reflection of the current student body. There were, he says, quite a few people of color who were attending this college. Here, Jeffries recounts sharing an office with a well-meaning but, he uses the word unsophisticated, white colleague. So, although Jeffries' environment was not always equitable, and these institutions continue to have these problems, he must have encountered many who were not as friendly as his office mate. He was able to retire and from being the chairperson of his department. And now, okay. Although Jeffrey's environment was not... Although Professor Jeffrey's environment was not always equitable, and these spaces continue to have problems with racism and intolerance, and, you know, he must have encountered many other colleagues who were not as, as well as students, who were not as friendly as his office mate, he was able to retire from a chair, from being chairperson of his department. And in his retirement, he goes on to talk about how he enjoyed listening to classical music and talks a little bit about keeping up with science. It's no surprise that the only black scientist to have signed the Szilard... It's no surprise that the only black scientist to have signed the Szilard petition some 42 years earlier when this interview happened... continues to hold pretty strong opinions about the nuclear industry and the politics surrounding it. So we're going to listen in about what he has to say about that. I hope you've enjoyed this special episode of Radioactive Waves. Thank you, as always, to our Atomic History patron members who make this I hope you've enjoyed this special episode of Radioactive Waves. Thank you, as always, to our Atomic History patron members who make this podcast possible every month. I hope to see you next month. And as always, don't forget to wash your hands.